To True Faith Podcast, I'm Norman Reilly, joined by Alex and Simon, live and direct from Australia, where I'm sure the fantastic cricket produced by England's helped obviously alleviate the misery of Newcastle, slipping into the bottom three for the first time since August. How's it going, lads?
Hello, Norman. It's not going the best, but you know what? There's hope. It's absolutely pissing it down here in Perth. I thought, you know, we're sold the idea that we'll come to this really warm country with great weather. It hasn't quite turned out that way. But tomorrow's another day. We're not beaten until we're beaten the cricket. And I'm still hopeful of getting a draw with this game.
I admire your optimism, mate. And that's, you know what, that's the approach to take to your football club as well, I reckon. we'll get straight into it then. So, Si, I'm gonna ask you a question, mate. So trying to analyse yesterday's performance, I found it a bit difficult because it was a really flat game. And then I started thinking that, you know what, that maybe isn't a bad thing, because to me it kind of looked like we'd got back to that went back to basics, you know, done the kind of pragmatic functional football that we did so well with up until and including the Palace match. Given the kind of paucity of skill in the squad, that to me is the best approach. I mean, did you see that yesterday, and would you agree it's kind of the way that we have to operate going forward?
Absolutely, I think we should have gone back to it sooner. The 4-2-3-1 is the only thing that's really worked this season. The lads know what they're doing in it. Rafa knows what he's telling people to do in it. And to be honest, it's the only we've won points this season, really. So I was pleased. I was pleased to see the lineup. We've got Lascelles back in as well, which makes a big difference in the whole setup, because he leads them through it. But absolutely back to basics. It's, you know what, we're nearly got something out of this game, and we'll always, you know, we've taken a few beatings recently when we tried to mix it up and tried two up front and left ourselves exposed. We're in every game when we play this formation with what we've got. So absolutely, I think this is what we're gonna have to accept until something changes.
Yeah, I agree, Alex. Would you wish to comment on that?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be really interesting how we'll go from here. So whatever happens with the takeover, what happens with Rafa Benitez, or whatever happens with the rest of the season, this spell between Bournemouth and Everton of 4-4-2, of a more open, less defensively minded side, will be judged very harshly, in my opinion. And I'm sure one of the journalists will ask Rafa why he felt the need in that run of, what, seven games to do what he did. It didn't work. And, let's not point fingers. I mean, he's the bloke that's paid a lot of money. But we were sat here on the podcast delighted he was getting Gale in the side along with Hosslew. We were delighted we were going to start having a go at teams. I remember being in the pub before Bournemouth, I think with Trent in Newcastle, which seems like a lifetime ago now, buzzing that we were doing it. So it's not a case of, what's Rafa doing, what's he playing at, blah, 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 because the vast majority of the support, not everybody, but the vast majority of the support was delighted with that change. So I just think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens from here. Obviously, we'll have a massive game against West Ham, and you know what? I think we might talk about it a little bit later, but I like it. I like the fact that Newcastle United are involved in massive games in the kind of moribund years under Pardew and Carver, where nothing seemed to matter until Carver fucked up beyond anyone thought was possible. We didn't have any games like this, any games to look forward to. All we had were the derbies against a dire Sunderland, who needed the points more than us, more often than not. So I'm really looking forward to this massive game, but this kind of return to 4-2-3-1, the return of Jose Perez in a defensive sense, which I know doesn't sound very familiar, but everyone knows what I'm talking about, it's probably going to be the story of the season from a tactical perspective, barring any miracles in terms of a takeover or significant investment in January.
Absolutely bang on, mate. I can't really add that because I completely agree. We'll shift on at the goal. So I was stood right behind the goal, more or less, in the fifth row. So I got an incredible angle of it. And up until that point, I mean, that football that we've gone back to, it had been working. We limited them to a load of the ball, as we had done earlier in the season with the opposition, that had a couple of half chances. Good run from Maitland Niles, one past the post, but nothing overly concerning. And then the goal, even then, a brilliant connection from Ozil. Don't get us wrong. I mean, he's connected with the ball perfectly. But We had opportunity. To me, it looked like we had opportunities to clear. Yedlin won a header when the ball was pumped in. Didn't get enough on it. Lejeune then went and won it, the second ball. And it was the third ball. And Ozil was just, he was in the acres of space. And he connected perfectly, as I said. And it just flew in the middle of the goal. And I've watched it a couple of times since. And it's almost one of those where I think, again, rather than it being down to the brilliance of the opposition, it was down to kind of, maybe you could say a mistake from us. I don't know if you would agree with that, Alex.
I think it's dangerous, Norman, to read too much into that one part of the game, because yes, we could say that we could do better defensively. I mean, most goals that you concede, you could do better defensively on. Why Rob Elliott's positioning is terrible. I've no idea what he's doing, but you know, was his position any worse than Caldwell's error against Everton? No. So Elliott's going to stay in goal on the back of that. Yes, Lejeune, could he head it better, but it's hardly, you know, it's hardly some of the errors we've seen so far. So I don't want to call it an error too much. I also think that, you know, listen, I'm positive, and I quite liked what I saw yesterday, particularly second half, in terms of what we could do to Arsenal and how, with the cells back, we do look far more defensively solid. However, Arsenal missed chances, and Arsenal did what Arsenal do very well of getting themselves in positions that really should have resulted in a goal or a key chance, and managing to make, you know, brilliant chances look like half chances. And their finishing, particularly from Lacazette against Rob Elliott, I mean, that was almost like playing on Parevo 2006, where you would lob the keeper at every opportunity. It was an absolute piss take of a finish.
Yep.
So, you know, while we could look at that one goal and think, you know what, we could do better, there were loads of other situations where we could have done better as well, but Arsenal didn't punish it.
Yeah.
Fact is, you give a £50 million footballer on £300,000 a week, that kind of time and space in the box to pick a spot, even though he's hit it in the middle of the goal where the goalkeeper could have been standing. You know, it's one of those things. I don't want to crucify the lads too much on the goal. Personally, I'd probably play Kieran Clarke alongside Jamal Lascelles from what we've seen recently. I don't know whether you agree, Si.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's now time to admit, and I think Norman's partly culpable on this as well, we got a bit carried away after the Spurs game.
20 minutes.
No.
He was absolutely incredible for that 20 minutes against Spurs, and what he did to Harry Kane, he embarrassed him until he got so frustrated he had to kill him.
Until he was taken.
But from what I've seen of him recently is a player who looks absolutely short of confidence. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing anymore. He doesn't seem to be able to work well with his... He's played with Clark, he's played with Lascelles, he's played with Mbemba, but he's in a back three of Mbemba as well. And there's no coordination there, and I don't know if that's... He just needs a bit more time to settle. I'm not writing him off, but I totally agree. I think we know what we're getting from Lascelles and Clark. They're comfortable with each other, and they've just got a much better record.
Just to contradict myself there and disagree with Si, it's like, I agree broadly with what Si's saying, but I don't think Lejeune had a bad game yesterday.
No.
All of Newcastle's flaws. I don't know what I'm trying to say is, am I thinking about too much, or rearranging the deck test and the track of the Titanic here? Is bringing in Kieran Clarke for Florian Lejeune really going to change anything? Maybe, and that's why I'd probably do it, and that's why I agree with what Si says in terms of confidence. I think Lejeune gives us, I know people might laugh at this, but he does give us an outlet in terms of being able to pass a long ball. He is quite good at finding players in the flanks when there's a bit of room. Maybe then again, I don't know, maybe Kieran Clarke can do that anyway, but it's a difficult one. But to bring it back to what you asked, Norman, about the goal, could we have done better? Probably. We could have done better in a few defensive situations against Arsenal away with the team they've got and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff in terms of money. 1-0 defeat's disappointing. But there were definite positives to be taken. I don't know what you felt from the away end, mate. Were you kind of walking out of there dispirited, but kind of thinking, well, you know, there's something to take in the West Ham next week?
I wasn't definitely wasn't dispirited. In fact, if anything, I walked out of there more positive than after the Leicester game at home, where we scored two goals and went a goal up, you know, and equalised. I mean, I thought Lejeune was fine yesterday. I mean, I think the whole back four did really well yesterday. Yedlin, I thought Yedlin had a really good game, which was good to see, because he's been a bit off the boil lately. And I walked away just again. You have to put it in perspective. You know, this is Arsenal away. It's a team that have had nothing but success for 20 odd years. I was walking up to the stadium, and I got cracking on with an Arsenal fan. I mean, this is a bloke, and I would say he was in his 60s. So you think, like, he's not going to be, you know, a deluded kind of younger fan who's known nothing but success, and the success they've got at the moment isn't enough. He basically said, oh, absolutely sick of Wenger. And I just said to him, like, well, but if you bring a new manager in, what is it you actually expect given Man City and Chelsea and Man United's money? And he kind of couldn't answer it. Because the reality is, Arsenal are, they're a good side. Some of the players, they've got world-class players in there. And we were competitive against them. Now, it might sound like I'm clutching at straws by saying, oh, we were competitive, let's go and have a party. But the reality is, to be competitive with Arsenal and to be in the game with the last 10 minutes was a positive. And due to the fact that we went back to basics, I was really, really pleased in lots of ways. I enjoyed kind of the tactical side of the game. I didn't enjoy the sideways rain and the fact that I had like 4 pints before the match and I just needed the toilet for like 90 minutes. Didn't enjoy that. But I walked away and in West Ham have hit some good form lately, don't get me wrong. I mean, like yesterday they destroyed a Stoke side who if they don't get rid of Hughes are gonna really struggle. But I'm feeling positive. I think there was almost like a return of belief yesterday, especially the last 10 minutes. You could see like you mentioned Perez's defensive performance and he did well. So I feeling positive, feeling a lot more positive than I was before the match, put it that way. So there you go. And I can ask a question to you, you lads. Si, for you, mate. Richie, when he came on yesterday, I thought he had a really good impact on the game. I was kind of, was I surprised to see him bench, maybe? Because I think he had a good opening sort of 45 minutes against Everton as well. What do you make of him being put on the bench yesterday? Do you think it was down to a kind of form thing or tactics, or do you think he's kind of saving him for West Ham?
I know what you're getting at. Richie's been our best player under Rafa, arguably. He's class, but he's played every minute this season now.
Like Gale, sorry.
But no, I think Jacob Murphy's been improving their game on game, and you would have been hard-pressed to leave him out of the side. Atsu's had a bit of a break, so he's come back in. I think it was just time to give Richie a rest.
Yeah.
If there's ever a time, Arsenal away. I think by half-time, Atsu was having a bit of a stinker. And what me and Alex and some of the lads here watching it noticed was that we're actually getting quite a few corners and set pieces. And if we're going to nick something, you need Richie on the pitch for set pieces. So he's brought him on quite early. He made the change in about 50 minutes, didn't he? Which is unlike Rafa. So absolutely, I was a bit surprised not to see him in the team, but I can kind of understand. The reason we bought Jacob Murphy wasn't to come in as one of the wingers that starts the game, but it was to stop him from having the whole season where we just had two wingers. And he's gradually kind of found a way where you can accept him in the starting lineup now, and it's taken a while. And I'm glad now we've got a choice of three wingers to choose from each week, rather than just having Atsu and Richie, who start the season very strongly but burn themselves out very quickly.
Can I just come in and give you an alternative potential reason? We're just guessing here. Yedlin had a really good game yesterday. He kept Alexis Sanchez very, 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 very quiet. And I think, I don't know, but I wasn't at the game, I only watched it on TV. I think maybe that Yedlin-Richie right-hand partnership in a defensive sense just hasn't been working, has it?
Yeah.
Yedlin's been getting a lot of stick from me in particular. But I think that maybe Rafa thought, you know what, it's time to mix that up a little bit, bring Richie on later on in the game if we're still in the game, but we're still in the game. And you know what, we didn't give Bellerin or Sanchez very much at all. I think Bellerin got in behind once in the first half and ballooned over the bar. So may not have just been all about Matt Ritchie, but also may have been a tactical switch based on the threat Arsenal had down their left-hand side.
Yep, and I agree. I mean, I think I mentioned it a second ago. I thought Yedlin was excellent yesterday, and that's one of the best games he's had, I would say, this season. Certainly it's the first match that I've watched him and thought, oh yeah, Yedlin's having a belting game. Yeah, like he was... He was really good, and it's excellent to see. And yeah, there might be something in what you said there. Just throw this one out to the both of you. Anyone else in the side stand out for you particularly? I mean, like stand out. You thought, you know, he played well.
Possaloo, for me.
Agreed.
I thought he was superb. He won everything in the air, everything. And you know what was kind of frustrating in the second half? I mean, it's easy for us to say watching on telly and it's in the stands as fans. It's like, I felt, you know, you feel like screaming at some of the other lads, like Perez or Diarmi when he came on, maybe, or Marino. Like, get beyond him. He's going to win the header. We're chasing the game, particularly from the 80th minute onwards. He's going to win the header. He was winning headers that were bouncing in the box in great positions. Dwight Gale's making the obvious run. It's not going to him. Someone else is going to take a chance from the wing there. even Matt Ritchie, and get in and think he's going to win this header. Let's get on. And it was kind of it was too much ball watching from too many players. I thought Arsenal was really good in that sense. I thought that Isaac Hayden had a good game. I've criticised him recently. Really poor booking to give away right at half time. Very frustrating. And I know Newcastle fans weren't happy about the referee not being particularly fair, but Jack Wilshere was going back towards his own goal. Hayden had already committed two or three or four fouls. Just a little bit of naivety from him, but I thought he was really, really good. So is anyone else before I just run through the team?
No, I don't think anyone else stood out. I mean, I thought Mankiw had a very good game. I thought both fullbacks were excellent, actually. Other than that, everyone else was a bit average, I'd say. As a team, we performed much better than we have done in recent weeks, but yeah, no other standout performance. Mankiw was good.
I just criticised Marino a little bit.
Yeah.
No.
I thought you had a good... you just cover your ears for this bit, Norman, right? Basically, I thought he did well in terms of winning possession. So brilliant, well done, mate. Particularly against Wilshere, he won the ball really good. And I'm only criticising, I'm only saying he could do better here because he can't do better. There were a few times in the second half when he did brilliantly, and then it was too much, and it was balls with the outside of the foot, and it was balls through the balls over the top that were never going to be reached by Joselu or Perez. When Hayden was on with the easy pass, or when Matt Ritchie was on with the easy pass. And it's just like that performance yesterday, from everything we've talked about, was us. It just felt like us, didn't it? It felt like not just the us of this season, but the us of last season, in terms of being compact, keeping clean sheets, being hard to break down, not giving away many chances, and we'll also add in some quality to the other end. Now, that's the big problem we've got at the minute, that quality at the other end. But that just felt like Newcastle United under Rafa Benitez. Marino's on the ball activity in the second half particularly was a little bit removed from that, in terms of not playing it simple and not maybe picking the wrong option or trying a Hollywood pass. And listening, I thought we had a decent game overall. I thought Hayden and Marino were far better in there than they were against Leicester at home.
Yeah.
So fair play to both for that. But I would just like to see a little bit more game intelligence and game management from Marino. I think he was taken off for that reason for Diome.
I agree. Absolutely agree. And I'd like to just say something about Joselu as well. He gets plenty of grief, so when he plays well, I think he deserves the praise. And he did. You're right. He won absolutely everything. Not even in the air. He was putting tackles in on the ground. His movement was good. He just had a really good game. And you know what? Fair play to him. It was a good performance. And I really hope that it gives him a bit of confidence going into West Ham. Lads.
Norman.
Yes.
Norman, can I ask you something?
Yes.
What was the away end like? Because I've seen some comments on social media which aren't too clever.
It was. I mean, I don't know if I can say anything negative in terms of like people being dickheads in general. I didn't pick up on that. It was just really flat. Now, I suppose you could look at it in one way, and that stadium's really big in the design of it. Like that, it's just so quiet. I mean, quiet to the point where you can hear foot hit the ball, you can hear players shouting at each other. Arsenal, saying that there was 59,500 there yesterday, I mean, that is absolute horseshite. There was so many spare seats, and it was just a really... I was flat. I mean, obviously, again, I think I mentioned this again after the Leicester match. You've got a team that hasn't done much. We have 9 games, yeah, we haven't won for 9 games. So, confidence is fragile, and as well, it was freezing and the rain was like kind of going sideways into your face. That might have impacted on it, but I was just flat. And one positive I will say is that 2 fans around us who I obviously don't know, they were negative. They were really really positive, and that was it. That was a good thing. I don't know what you've been reading about the atmosphere.
Well, it was very hard to hear on TV, particularly on foreign TV.
That's because there was note. That's because there was note to hear, mate, I think.
Yeah, it was just because I've seen some stuff on social media saying that fans were maybe a little bit getting a bit frustrated with the TV. But you know what? Social media may not be representative. That could be total bullshit. So I thought I'd ask someone who was there.
It was. I would say the atmosphere was muted. That's what I'd say. You know, it's one of those. Yeah. It's one of those sometimes where like you might hear a song starting and then you'll join in, and 3 other people will join in, and then by the end of it, it's just you kind of fading off into the distance.
Right.
You know, United, by the end of it, and you're like, you start to get a bit self-conscious, you're like, it's just my voice now, isn't it? But there you go. It's just one of those days in terms of the atmosphere, I think. Question for you then, lads. Actually, I'm going to make a point first. The point I want to make is, again, we're going on social media here, so like percentages wise, who knows? It's probably next to nothing. But the comparisons with Burnley, I've read this a few times now. People saying, well, you know, if Burnley can do it, why can't we? And I'm going to have to say, like, Burnley came up under Dyche a few seasons back and they got relegated straight away. And then they went back up. And then they had a season of, like, consolidation / survival last year. And now they're kind of reaping the benefits of that stability and that investment. So I think I don't think there's a comparison to be made with Burnley at all. I don't know how you two see that.
It's a really moot point, Norman. It's like almost a waste of time. So we'll talk about it. But yeah, you can compare yourself to other clubs. You can compare yourself to contemporaries and say, "Should we be doing as well as this club, as that club, as this? You know, blah blah blah." Burnley spent £15 million on a striker in the summer, Chris Wood, who would be a great addition to Newcastle's team. We bought Hosseluu, who was Stoke City's fourth choice striker. And who's doing what he is doing for us. You could run through the team and say who cost this and this, and you know what, fair play to Sean Dyche and Burnley, they've done a good job. If anyone's listening to this is getting annoyed about Burnley or Sean Dyche or the league table, if you get annoyed at Burnley, Mike Ashley's winning, Keith Bishop's winning, because they want you to think about Burnley, because they want you to think about Sean Dyche doing things in a shoestring, because that's how they want, you know, that's how they want you to think, that they want to deflect away from their own failures, deflect away from their own deceit, and for you to concentrate and think, well, how is this one very specific example of success not being replicated at this football club? When the real answer is, why is this very specific example of success not being replicated? Is because of infrastructure, is because of support and planning at boardroom level, is because of long-term planning, is because of a transfer strategy that works, etc., and a youth policy that bears fruit. And all these things, and it's just, you know, there aren't any easy answers to this. And if there is anyone out there saying these kind of things, then Mike Ashley is winning this battle in this war, and more fool you if that's something. And this, I'm you know what, I've said it before, and I'm going to quite in a lot of detail, you know, after the Leicester City podcast, why are we in a relegation battle because of Mike Ashley? But we haven't lost or failed to win in 8 games because of Mike Ashley. The players have made mistakes. The managers made mistakes, 100%, in my opinion. We should have taken points in those games. In my opinion, we were the better team in that run than, you know, Bournemouth, a game of two halves. But you could say, could we and should we have won against Bournemouth? Maybe. There's 3 points left out there. West Brom, we should have won the game. There's another 2 left out there. We're at 5 points now. Leicester and Everton, we could have won both of those games. So there's 6. So there's 11 points there. Then I think that team and that collective unit were good enough to take from those games based on the performances that I saw. So it's not just a, you know, we can't analyse anything, you can't criticise, because actually, but actually is, the, you know, whatever, however we'll go into it, once you start digging down, he is the root cause of the problem. The football club needs sold. The fact that it's not being sold every single day is a little bit more blood being drawn from our survival campaign. Every single day is a day wasted by Mike Ashley, and every single day we need to get angry and angrier. But you know, there's not a lot we can do as fans apart from continue to back the team in the strongest possible way. But this Burnley comparison is laughable. I mean, if you want to take it the other way, look at the club yesterday who won their first home game in a year, Sunderland. To, I don't know whether they're still in the Division 2 relegation places. Probably not. I don't know, but that's also the other flip side of the story. If you want to look at Burnley, why not look at Sunderland? Oh, I'll tell you what, Sunderland being all over rivals are maybe a little bit of bias in there, maybe a little bit glee in my voice that they're celebrating so much after, you know, getting out of the Division 2 relegation places with a squad and a budget far outstripping their rivals in that league. Why not look at Norwich City, 20 of the relegation zone in the Championship? Why not look at Aston Villa, who, despite spending money Rafa Benitez, would absolutely... If Rafa Benitez had Villa's budget, would be fucking league champions by now. In the Premier League, we'd be at a Man City.
Middlesbrough.
You know, look at Middlesbrough. But particularly look at the 2 clubs we went down with, Norwich and Villa. And if you want to look at Burnley, I'd say those two are of a more realistic approach. Both of those 2 clubs, by the way, have far more investment than Newcastle. So for every Burnley, everyone saying Burnley, I'd say look at those two. That's where we should be. We should be a Sunderland. We should be a... a Norwich or a Vile, and we're not, because of one man and one man alone. And if people can't say that, then more fool them. Sorry, that's a very detailed answer, I think, I've given. So let you know.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better myself. Absolutely right. It's getting a bit boring, isn't it? Because everyone's obviously getting angry at the results, and your natural instinct is you need someone to blame, and Mike Ashley's very good at just disappearing and kind of leaving the rest out to dry until it blows over. So we must remember that as we go forward.
Well, another thing as well, I think, I don't know if it's been underestimated, but, and I know, you know, like footballers are professionals, a manager, all other professionals, but if you're in a company or a business or whatever, a sporting institution where there's like this kind of uncertainty, you know, like, oh, we're going to be taken over. Oh, the takeover's not happening. Oh, the takeover's happening. Oh, it's not happening. There's just this constant uncertainty, and that must have an effect on the playing staff and on the managing staff. I mean, to a certain extent, it's almost like they can be as professional as possible, but sometimes they must feel like they don't know whether they're coming or going. Do you think that must impact on it, right?
Norman, it's way easier than that. Look at January. The manager doesn't know how much money he's got to spend.
Right.
The manager doesn't know when you'll get the money. The people are missing this point. They're talking about the amount of money. Bollocks to that. It's when we should be getting our deals done, and Rafa wants those deals done the first 4 or 5 days of January. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get this money until the 18th of January, whatever the speculation is, when this Premier League payment hits. And we're doing business the last week of January. We've got 3 or 4 fixes in January, which are massive games. We've got Palace on the 1st of February. Even the delay in the January transfer window, or the transfer budget, and the fact that it might not be very big, is far more damaging, I'd say, than any uncertainty.
Yeah, that's going to impact on his ability to prepare for football matches. The fact that he's probably having to do 3 or 4 times the amount of work for a transfer window, because he's got to...
Yeah, he's got such a breadth of targets.
Yeah, he's got to go over so many targets and so many different possibilities as to who's in charge, what's the money, etc. Are we going to be able to sell people? It must be impacting on his ability to... He's only one man, he's only got 24 hours in his day, and he's probably using them all. And it's going to impact on his ability to win his points.
I mean, the thing is with Rafa as well, I mean, I suppose he learned his lesson in the summer in how Mike Ashley operates. You've got this bloke, Rafa Benitez, meticulous manager, setting up these deals at the start of the summer, telling these players that he wants them, convince them to come to the club, and then all of a sudden having like the rug pulled from under him. So in any kind of normal situation, you know, with a chairman who or an owner who is, let's say, you know, inverted commas, saying normal, Benitez would be working. He'd be working on the deals now, but he can't. He can't work on any deals now because he's got absolutely no idea whether or not they'll come off and what he's got. And like you say, are we going to end up signing players towards the end of January when they've missed a few games? Are they going to be third and fourth choices? It's just incredibly frustrating, and it just makes me, you know, think more and more. Mike Ashley, please just fuck off out of our club. But there you go. And that's a little bit of anger coming through, and I'll try and keep a lid on it. I don't know if you two lads have got any more you'd like to say about the game yesterday, because I'm pretty much done on that side of things.
Summing up where you started, which was it was a much, much more positive performance. It was back to basics, as you say. It's especially the second half. If we can play like that against West Ham, we'll smash them again 3-0.
Well, this is what I'm going to ask you. I'll ask you, Alex. Yeah, well, obviously, you know, the West Ham game is huge. We know that. But if you're in the bottom three, then every game's huge. So in terms of what's needed to get something from it, and not only from this game, but like just beyond. I mean, we know we need to make signings. You know, we know it's going to be a tough season. We know there's all the uncertainty with the takeover. But based on what we have right now, what do you think that we need to start doing, or we need to see happen?
Well, we're entering one of the most important runs of games in the modern history of Newcastle United. And you know what? Easy to say that. You can say that the last relegation campaign. You can say that the year before when we beat West Ham on the final day. You can say it last season. But this is it, because... Should the club continue to fall and the team continue to fall lower and lower down the Premier League table? I mean, unlikely, by the way, but if West Brom win this afternoon, your time, and Everton lose at home to Swansea, unlikely, but, you know, they were Everton are shite, as we saw on Wednesday. We'll be bottom of the league. So it's possible that we're going to end this weekend of round of fixtures, bottom of the league, and I just think it's just going to take such an effort from everybody. And it's easy for me to say on the podcast, and we've said it before, and I'm, you know, 8 hours ahead of you, and however many thousand miles away here in Perth, Australia, but I don't think that stadium against Everton was doing everything it possibly could to support that team. I don't think the team was doing everything it possibly could to get the points with the errors and the lack of blah, blah, blah. You did the post-Everton podcast. It was very good, Colin. I just think there's to get out of this mess, takeover or otherwise, and that's me talking very short-term, it's takeover otherwise, it's going to take a collective mental strength from supporters and players that we haven't seen so far this season. But it is there. It is there. We saw it the last time we were relegated when we put a 5-game unbeaten run together at the end of the season and took 10 points when everyone had written off. You saw it, last season when a section of the fan base or section of support was saying we fucked a promotion, when we pissed promotion. You saw it last season when we won at Brighton Huddersfield. It's going to take that kind of level-headed coolness from us all to be so crystal clear about what's required, starting at West Ham. Newcastle fans this week before West Ham need to be getting in the mood, even though there's only going to be 3,000 there in the stadium. And you know what, Norman, I sincerely hope it's not flat there, because that West Ham crowd will turn on their players, and that West Ham team know how to bottle it. And, it's great beating Chelsea and drawing with Arsenal with, 20% possession is great. They're going to be expected to bring the game to us, and it's a new challenge for them. And we need to be, as a fan base, as a football club, we need to be ready for this game and treat this game not just as another game. This is a fucking huge game. And like I alluded to earlier in the programme, too long in the past, even in games that affected relegation and promotion, Newcastle United have lost too many big games or failed to win too many big games. And you know what we did at Preston last season was a big game at home. I know it was Preston, I know it was Simon Grayson, and I know we won 4-1 on telly. But that was a big game. And I think I said in the podcast before then, Newcastle, in our lifetime, failed to win the big games. And this one, this side, is the first of the big games. Man City is a massive game. You know why Man City is a massive game? Because the likelihood is we could be in the relegation zone. And like you correctly said, Norman, every game in the relegation zone is a massive game, and every point is thoroughly important. So let's social media. We'll get out. We'll do 10 podcasts on the relevance of social media in terms of how the support's feeling. But let's get in the mindset now. What is it today? It's like the 16th of December or something. Between now and January the 1st against Stoke, I want to see Newcastle United outside the relegation zone. Is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? At the moment, I don't know. But the players and the fans need to realise that and need to think, if we can start in January, when allegedly we're going to be able to improve the squad somewhat, and fingers crossed with a takeover happen, if we can start that ahead of the game outside the relegation zone, then I'd be supremely confident of staying in this league. And if we are going to be taken over, staying in this league is bigger than it's ever been before. What Ashley's doing right now, and I'm talking right now, whatever time you listen to this, whether it be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or whatever Ashley is doing right now, right this second, is more corrosive and more damaging in Newcastle United than anything he's done before. And he's done some bad stuff by standing in the way of this takeover.
Agreed. I mean, the game, even since the first relegation that we suffered under Ashley, the amount of money in the game has gone up again exponentially. And this season is it's fucking huge in terms of our Newcastle United Football Club. And I think staying up is of paramount importance. And do I believe we're going to do it? I do. Yeah. I mean, you have to for a start. Otherwise, you would just give up. But I'm still confident that we've got enough there, and we've got enough talent in the managerial staff to do that. And hopefully the first positive steps will start against West Ham next Saturday. I'll be there, and I'll be screaming my lungs out with encouragement as much as I can. So I guess that's it, really, lads. Unless you have anything to add, just before we say bye to everyone.
Thanks very much to everyone who's been leaving the 5-star reviews on iTunes. There's loads of people done it. It really helps us get the podcast message out there. And give a follow at TFWeeklyPod on Twitter. Find one on Facebook at the same thing. Thanks everyone who listens to the show. We've been getting loads of messages here in Australia from Australian. Marcus wanting to meet up, which is great. And we also met some nice lads in Singapore as well. They were massive, Mark. So yeah, basically, thanks everyone who listens to the show. I'm sure everything we'll be fine this season, and we'll beat West Ham next week. Norman, I'm looking forward to listening to your preview through the week.
I will be doing a preview, yes. I reckon that'll probably be on Wednesday or Thursday. Get the preview out, and then after that, there'll obviously be a review of the victory against West Ham. So thanks very much, everyone.
Cheers.
Cheers.